Bankless Nation, it is the third week of September. It's time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, this is rate cut week. We got those rate cuts.
It's a good week. It's also a green week, more importantly.
Maybe those two things are related, actually. I want to discuss with you if this is bullish for crypto. Also, I got a bigger picture take coming from Arthur Hayes talking about the third mandate of the Fed. You know how the Fed has a dual mandate? Well, Arthur Hayes says they just opened a third leg on that stool there with the third mandate. This might mean yield curve control.
You love your Arthur Hayes macro takes in the weekly roll-up.
He's great.
Yeah. We're also going to talk about a crypto ETF explosion, not one that's happening, but one we think that is coming because a brand new announcement out of the SEC lowering the barrier for what it takes to make an ETF out of crypto assets. Speaking of crypto assets, is Base getting a token? Huh. Jesse Pollock said that they are exploring a Base token. And if I think that official Coinbase comms is saying they are exploring a Base token, I think they've been exploring it for a while.
Why would you explore if you weren't going to actually do it? You know, what's the purpose of exploring?
Why just tease us? Why would you just tease us without actually following through?
Also, Tether is launching a Made in America stablecoin. We'll discuss that. And speaking of the SEC, we got to dissect the most bullish crypto speech to ever come out of a regulator. Okay, Paul Atkins was in Paris and he said, crypto's time will come.
Wait, I'm having deja vu. I thought we already had a most bullish speech out of the SEC from Paul Atkins like a month ago.
He just did it again. Did I say crypto's time will come? He said crypto's time has come. Even better, even more bullish than what I just said.
That's even sooner.
Also, David, I want to give you a round the world tour of how crypto is exporting freedom and how nation states and governments and banks are reacting. We've got UK doing things and Canada doing things. Also a revolution in Nepal that was partially crypto driven. And what's going on in West Africa? It's kind of cool to peer around the world and see how crypto is affecting things.
Affecting. Is the word destabilizing the right word?
Depends on your perspective, I guess. Maybe some things needed to be destabilized, David. Unbundled. Maybe some freedom needed to go back to the people.
Before we get into all of that, a message from our friends and sponsors over at Zero G. Zero G means zero gravity. They are an AI-dedicated chain that exists end-to-end to be decentralized and truly verifiable for an AI operating system. Ryan, I think you're a believer that there will be another AI crypto hype cycle in the future, right?
Yeah, I do. I think the first one didn't make much sense. The second one will probably make a lot more sense.
Oh, do you mean the first one that was like January of this last year and it was like the AI agent meta? Yeah. You know, I actually count that as like the third.
Oh, really?
I think there were two smaller bubbles that didn't really bubble up into like capturing the entire crypto zeitgeist. That was the first one that did. But that was really like the third one. Anyways, I think we're in agreement that this was going to be a reoccurring theme. Anyways, Zero G is it's a layer one built with a sub-second finality, meant to be a platform to host actual AI. 107 billion parameter model is actually fully on chain with Zero G. It's just like massively scalable, so you can put AI on the blockchain. They're partnered with giants like Alibaba, Google, Chainlink, and Optimism. And if you are serious about building in the world of crypto and AI, check out zerog.ai. Very simple URL. There's a link in the show notes so you can get started. Bankless.cc/zerogai.
David, let's start with crypto prices now in the market section. Then we'll get to what old Powell was doing on the week. So what is Bitcoin telling us this week?
Bitcoin's happy. $17,600, up almost 3% on the week. So still below all-time highs. But man, $117,000 is like a very strong Bitcoin price. ETH still just below its all-time highs. $4,620, up 4.3% on the week. And then also, Ryan, a new all-time high in total crypto market cap.
Wow.
So down market tokens got a bump. So 4.213 trillion dollars is the new all-time high.
I wasn't expecting that, David, going to the numbers of a all-time high crypto market cap. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I got a question for you, Ryan.
Sure.
What do you think about the four-year cycle?
I think it's a liquidity cycle. I think it's a liquidity cycle. And I think that the liquidity cycle has possibly extended. And if you look at the liquidity cycle, global macro liquidity cycle, listen to me, I'm sounding like Arthur Hayes, huh? A little bit. If you look at that this time around, it looks like it could be extended, though we are probably on the later part of the global liquidity cycle, but I think it stretches into 2025, 2026. And so pretty much I'm a believer in these cycles. I just think this one might be more like a five-year cycle. Why? What do you think?
So if we went back in time, and I'm pretty sure I explicitly said this on at least a few rolls, maybe you did too, that like if the four-year cycle plays out, late 2025 will be the frothy blow-off top hypermania part of the cycle.
That's right.
Does not feel like that at all, obviously, right now. I don't think so. If you go look at the Bitcoin price, there's always the phase, according to the four-year cycles, if you could just look at the patterns, there's the phase in which Bitcoin kind of just like marches up. And at the end of the year, like typically the third of 4 years, you look back on that year like, oh, Bitcoin is up 300%. And then the blow-off top happens.
Yep.
We are in the longest extended linear price increase in Bitcoin's history. Bitcoin has been going up for over almost 3 years now. Just modestly, not too fast, not too slow, but it's been going up for 3 years in a row. Bitcoin has never gone up for 3 years in a row from trough to peak without a blow-off top. So this is the longest, most mellow price increase that we've ever seen in Bitcoin, which I think is great. I think that's fantastic. I think that's very healthy. I think that's very mature. Vol is down. Price is up. There's seemingly a sustained bid under Bitcoin. ETH isn't there yet. It's got some lag because we had some, you know, intra-market jitters in ETH, but it's continuing in that same trend like a year behind Bitcoin. So I think the four-year cycle, we can start to wave goodbye to it.
Oh, you think it's over? Like there are no more four-year cycles. We're just on some other, you know, like some other track?
Yeah. I think we've escaped the boom bust cycles of crypto is kind of what I'm saying.
I wouldn't go that far. My personal take is we still get boom bust, but they're less violent.
They're more moderate.
And they're less volatile. One explainer for why we're a little bit less volatile in these institutional grade assets, in particular Bitcoin, is just what we were talking to James Seyfert about, which is the institutional capital coming into ETFs is a little bit more disciplined than the retail capital. For instance, if you're an RIA, RIAs are the largest holders of Bitcoin ETFs, for instance, you might have a mandate that says 5% of your portfolio is in Bitcoin, right? And on a monthly basis, if Bitcoin goes up and that becomes 7%, then you sell the 2% and you readjust it back to 5%. Or if Bitcoin goes down, you know, it becomes 3% of your portfolio, you sell other stocks and other assets and you make it 5%
again. Bitcoin,
It's these kind of algorithmic sort of disciplines that I'm not sure that retail is thinking about so much, but institutional capital tends to follow.
Speaking of discipline, the other thing that's not present right now in this boom bust cycle or the lack of the boom bust cycle is over leveraging on credit. Credit usage in the market is modest. So there's just not a lot of leverage in the system right now.
Yeah, not as much as there could be. We got some room. We got some room to run. That's what we're saying.
we can wind this thing up even more.
Well, speaking of that, we got the first Fed rate cuts in almost a year. So the last time they did this.
So credit is even cheaper. Let's do this.
Thanks, Powell. December 2024 was the last time they did it. They cut it on the 25 basis points. So it's pretty much as prediction markets predicted. You want to look at the Fed fund rates over the 10-year time horizon? It'll go even longer. So remember, we've been up in the five range all the way from 2023. And then it sort of started to drop in the end of 2024. And then we've been hovering at this like 4.25% range. And now we're down another 25 basis points. So it's not the 50 basis point cut that I think maybe some were hoping for, but it is pretty much what markets expected. And markets are optimistic on that. Like, have you looked at stocks today?
Yeah, they were like jittery yesterday right after the news. But this morning, stonks are green, or at least the stonks that I pay attention to, which is like the finance tech sector.
Yeah.
Market pretty happy right now.
Okay, so they're happy. And then we also have some other Fed rate cuts that people predict are coming. So of course, we just got
our first.
So
it's not just the 0.25% that we got cut yesterday. There is going to be another 25 bips in October, or at least is what Polymarket is predicting, with an 80%
probability
that we're going to get another 25 bips cut on October 29th and another 25 bips cut on December 10th. So it's not just about getting 25 bips now. It's about the trend of we're going to get 75 bips cut by the end of the year is what the Polymarket people are predicting.
So, of course, this probably means good things for our risk on assets, good for crypto assets. I got a Bitcoin
leverage,
bull take.
Baby.
Bitcoin bull take and an ETH bull take. Which one you want, David? You can only pick one for the tweets.
Wait, if I pick one, I don't get the other?
Yeah, sorry. This is,
ETH,
scarcity,
ETH.
Time
I pick
scarcity.
ETH. I pick
right.
ETH.
ETH. This is Joseph Shalom, of course, you know, SBET. He said, the Fed's rate cut marks the start of an easing cycle with another 50 bips. That's what you said, expected this year. Momentum for growth assets will only get stronger. Ethereum is the productive yield-bearing digital asset primed to capture this momentum.
Yeah.
There you go. Joseph is bullish on this.
Yeah. Wait, I don't get the Bitcoin one?
I'm not going to show you the Bitcoin one because you picked the ETH one. So we only get one this episode, David. I actually want to turn you to... Sorry, man. Sorry. It's bullish for Bitcoin too.
Okay. We will put it in the show notes. How about that?
You really want to see this. It's not that great of a take. Okay. So here's the bigger picture here, which is... somewhat interesting. And this came out shortly before the rate cut news. This is a take from Arthur Hayes, my favorite. With Fed board member Mirren now confirmed, the mainstream media is preparing the world for the Fed's third mandate, which is essentially yield curve control, LFG, Bitcoin to a million. Okay. What do you think this means?
Yield curve control is kind of like price controls. That means that they're going to just in the circumstance that yields are higher than what they want it to be, they will just mint treasuries out of thin air to dampen yields or something like that. But why?
Yes, that's
I'm
close.
Need
okay,
more
so
help.
There's a few things that Arthur is saying. One is he's saying the mainstream media is preparing the world for the Fed's third mandate. Okay. When he's saying mainstream media is preparing the world, he's referring to articles like this. So this is a summary by Bloomberg AI. Talking about the Fed Reserve's dual mandate becoming a third mandate. Okay, we'll talk about that. Anyway, there was all of these articles that made reference to a speech from Stephen Mirren gave in front of Congress saying the Fed didn't just have two mandates. The two traditional mandates, of course, are low inflation and unemployment, maximizing full employment, right? That's the dual mandate of the Fed. Those are the things that they're supposed to do. Well, Main Street media, is what Arthur is saying, is preparing the world for the third mandate in writing articles like this. And the third mandate, in a speech, Steve Mirren, who is on the FOMC, he's one of the 12 FOMC governors that decide what rates actually are, and he's newly appointed. He's been appointed by Trump in August, so he took over from someone who resigned. So he's new, he's a Trump pick, and, as you've said before on these episodes, who's Trump going to pick? He's going to pick the most rate cutting people he can. Yeah,
yeah.
Rate cut. That is Steve.
By the way, there was general unanimous support of the 0.25 bips cut that the Fed just gave, except for one guy
who
dissented
and
wanted a whole 0.5% bips cut. Didn't get it, but it was Rady McRate cut. Steve Mirren.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so
appointed by Trump.
Yeah, so Steve Mirren in front of Congress, he gave a speech and he said, in addition to the inflation and full employment mandates of the Fed, there's actually a third that's incredibly important. He said it's this, moderate long-term interest rates are within the Fed's charter. That is the third mandate. So the Fed actually has to make sure that interest rates are moderate to low. So they're in control of interest rates. The reason for this is, of course, interest rates are the rate that the federal government has to pay on its own debt. And that amount has exceeded the amount that we spend on national defense every year, that the U.S. spends on national defense. So at a 4 to 5% rate, that's much more costly than if it's at a 2 to 3% rate. So this is Steve Mirren saying effectively, it's part of our mandate to actually make sure that this rate is low. What that is that's yield curve control. That's the type of thing that we were doing in the 1940s. That is currency debasement, effectively. That's where we do the Bank of Japan thing, where we try to control the interest rates and we adjust the money supply accordingly. So that's the bigger picture of what's happening with the Fed and how the conversation is turning. Yeah, and of course, Arthur Hayes links this to the price of Bitcoin. Where there's yield curve control, where there's the Fed duty to do this, then all commodity, scarce, store value type assets must go up.
My uninformed reaction to this is two mandates, which kind of represent opposite poles, kind of like a dipole mandate, is all you have to do is walk the line between those two things. And like, yeah, you have to balance, like you have to pick where on that line you want to be, but you just pick a point on the line. A third mandate, I think, is overly chaotic. Like a binary star system, stable. A trinary star system eventually ejects one of the stars.
That's right.
And I'm worried that having a third mandate, it makes it fundamentally at odds with being able to balance, harmonize between all of these things. And I'm like, under this, if this is at all a correct pattern to match to, one of these things just gets ejected. And that's got to be inflation, because
it's
if you're
going to
have, it's got to be inflation. Inflation's leaving and we're going to have full employment and yield curve control.
Yep.
Like you can't do all three. You have to pick two.
It's probably the case, David. It's probably a, you know, central bank trilemma, if you will. And you got to pick, you got to pick two of the three. We've got some Solana dats that have come in pretty hot on the week. So
wow,
what's going
on
here?
Multicoin has completed the purchase of 7 million Solana. So Multicoin has spun up a DAT. They somehow amassed like $1.5 billion in cash to buy Solana. And then they did it. And they bought 7 million Solana. And so now this Forward is the ticker. Why is it called Forward? Forward Industries is the company. And so they have just an absolute ton of Solana on the balance sheet. Right now, the MNAV is clocking in at 1.85. So not only do they have a bunch of SOL on the balance sheet, but they have MNAV to now leverage to go buy more. And so this thing has just like rocketed in size up very, very quickly.
It's impressive how much they spent basically right out of the gate, right? I mean, he wasn't dollar cost averaging in. They were just like buying everything
that week. He was smashing market buy.
Yeah, you could see Solana in the purple in some of these charts. Actually, you can't really see it in some of these charts. Like the trading volume by asset, Solana stocks, treasury stocks are just like not on the radar at all. But they're doing fairly well from an aggregate market cap perspective. You can see it in purple. Down here, what is this? We're at about $4.6 billion worth of SOL inside of DATS right now. And that wasn't the only one, David. Also, Pantera Capital put together a Solana DAT called Helios. So this is a $500 million DAT. It could be up to a $1.25 billion DAT. And Dan Moorhead from Pantera was on CNBC, Bloomberg, wherever he could go, talking this up, of course.
Doing the thing.
Now, yeah. I was a little confused by the name because I thought Mert might be associated with this.
Helios is like the Infura of Solana. It's like the RPC messaging transaction.
Yeah,
relayer,
validator.
For
that
Solana.
Whole thing.
So, like, yeah, exactly. Which is like, it's like Mert's company. So, like,
yeah,
conflict
I feel like
of things
they
here.
Yeah, they should have talked to him about, like,
should've,
hey,
yeah,
like, should have
talked to
this.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. So it's basically the teams have assembled here. Dan Moorhead is on Team Soul at this point in the cycle, it seems like. And then you also have Kyle Samani from Multicoin. And you also have
what team is he on?
Galaxy. What's that? Are you serious? No. You also have Galaxy, who Mike Novogratz is making appearances because they're involved in the Ford. So that's kind of them against some of the other KOLs and TradFi thought leaders.
Yeah, the pieces are on the table. People are making moves, and we will see how the game unfolds. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about all of the ETFs that are about to come online. There's going to be an ETF waterfall coming. All of our tokens are about to become ETFs because of this new announcement, this new thing that got approved called generic listing standards by the SEC. We're going to talk about what that actually means, and is Base launching a token? The network that doesn't have a token is now getting a token, or at least they are looking into it, I should say. And then They're exploring a network token. And also Google is adopting crypto for AI agent payments. Not Stripe, not Web2. They're using crypto. So that's pretty cool. We're going to talk about that and more. But first, we're going to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, like Uniswap. It's a browser wallet. It's a mobile wallet. It's a blockchain that goes super fast. It's the best place to do DeFi. We're going to hear from them right now.
Ethereum's layer 2 universe is exploding with choices. But if you're looking for the best place to park and move your tokens, make your next stop Unichain. First, liquidity. Unichain hosts the most liquid Uniswap V4 deployment on any layer 2, giving you deeper pools for flagship pairs like ETH-USDC. More liquidity means better prices, less slippage, and smoother swaps, exactly what traders crave. The numbers back it up. Unichain leads all layer 2s in total value locked for Uniswap V4. And it's not just deep, it's fast and fully transparent, purpose-built to be the home base for DeFi and cross-chain liquidity. When it comes to costs, Unichain is a no-brainer. Transaction fees come in about 95% cheaper than Ethereum mainnet, slashing the price of creating or accessing liquidity. Want to stay in the loop on Unichain? Visit unichain.org or follow at Unichain on X for all the updates. DGEN started as a tight-knit community on Farcaster and organically grew into one of the top meme coins on Base. What began as a simple idea, tip anyone who joins the fun, sparked an economy that turned into a movement. The community runs the show from the logo and the lore to funding and building ambitious ideas together. Over 1 million DGens now power each other with their generosity, creativity, and ability to get things done. At the center is the DGen token. It rewards engagement, fuels tipping, and drives the marketplace for builders and fans. That same energy gave rise to DGen Chain, a fast, low-cost layer 3 for new projects. And now the DGen app, the easiest way to connect, earn, and participate in decentralized social media with a built-in wallet and real token utility. In DGen, the hat stays on. Join DGen and get on the app waitlist at www.dgen.tips. Imagine a world where traditional finance meets the power of blockchain seamlessly. That's what Mantle is pioneering with Blockchain for Banking, a revolutionary new category at the intersection of TradFi and Web3. At the heart is UR, the world's first money app built fully on chain. It gives you a Swiss IBAN account, blending fiat currencies like the euro, the Swiss franc, the United States dollar, or the renminbi with crypto, all in one place. Enjoy real-world usability and blockchain's trust and programmability. Transactions post directly to the blockchain, compatible with TradFi rails and packed with integrated DeFi futures. UR transforms Mantle Network into the ultimate platform for on-chain financial services, unifying payments, trading, and assets like the MI4, the METH protocol, and Function's FBTC. Backed by developer grants, ecosystem incentives, and top distribution through the UR app, reward stations, and Bybit launch pool. For MNT holders, every economic activity in UR drives value back to you, embodying the entire stack and future growth of this super app ecosystem. Follow Mantle on X at Mantle_official for the latest updates on blockchain for banking. That's x.com/Mantle_official. The SEC has approved generic listing standards for ETFs. Okay, what does this mean? Previously for the Bitcoin and the ETH ETF, you had to go through this very meticulous process where you would file an S1, the SEC would review it, they would give you a comment period, they'd go back and forth. You had to like jump through all of these hurdles. Basically a very, very permissioned, gate-kept process, bureaucratic process. Allowed Gary Gensler to have a lot of control. The SEC
it also
has
took a long time, David. It took like a year.
It took a long time, very expensive. You might have gotten sued, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's gone. That's changing. The SEC has approved changes that allows certain exchanges, NASDAQ, NYSE mainly, but others too, to list and trade commodity-based ETFs, including those based on crypto assets, without needing a separate product-by-product SEC approval under Section 19B. 19B is like where all the bureaucracy comes in. Okay, so how does this impact ETFs? What does it mean? What does it mean? We're going to get a faster path for crypto and commodity ETFs. So like I said, before this, every ETF had to be vetted case by case under listing, rule filings, public comments. That would take months. This generic standards has shortened that timeline. There's more predictable rules. So there's just clear criteria about creating an ETF. Either the asset already has some level of surveillance and futures history or is tied to an existing ETF with sufficient exposure. If you just check a certain number of boxes, you just got a green light for an ETF. More crypto assets are going to become eligible. Previously, only Bitcoin and Ethereum had really cleared the hurdles for spot-based ETFs so far. Now that this generic listing standards is here, these rules have opened the doors for many, many, many more coins to be just approved. Things like Dogecoin, my favorite, Litecoin, Polkadot, Avalanche, Chainlink, Stellar, like all of these things are potential candidates for getting an ETF. It's just going to be a lower cost and much less complexity for issuers. And then as investors, we're all going to have much more choice. And so we're kind of just like opening up the doors of what could be. And we're also throwing it to the market rather than to the regulators to be able to approve and list ETFs. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, this listing process is going to get a whole lot faster. And so the criteria are you have to be a commodity. So you still can't be a security. All right. So there's still that. And I know there's still some ambiguity of what's a commodity, what's a security. But some proof of that is if there's a future contract, there's a futures contract in operation for 6 months, then you're kind of eligible to be on this fast track. So if it's a security asset, it still can't be an ETF. But where I think about this is it's almost like an ERC-20 for TradFi, where it just gives TradFi kind of a token wrapper for our crypto assets, right? That they can fairly easily spin up. And this is going to give them a process for spinning them up. So, man, we're going to see so much here. Like, here's a list of all of the possibilities we might see. You mentioned a number of them. I also think we had James Seyfert on the episode from Bloomberg. He's kind of an ETF specialist and been covering this from day one. He's most excited about these blended ETF assets, right? Things that track, you know, the top 10 crypto assets and indices of some type, or even you could imagine like a 2x long ETH or a 2x long, you know,
leverage
SHIB. Yeah. Yeah, you probably
2x right? Long this, Doge.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, sign me up. So it's great. I mean, I guess it's great for investor choice, which is something that, you know, we're advocates of. And this will get more assets to market faster. And then the market can just decide what it wants to buy and like what it doesn't. So there's not kind of the gatekeepers in the way.
I think my favorite takeaway from that episode was James. Again, it'll come out soon. He called it this spaghetti cannon.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a cannon of spaghetti and it's going to shoot all the spaghetti at the wall and some things are going to drop off the wall because the market just doesn't want it. But some things are going to stick. And we kind of just have what we call the ERC-20 version, but in TradFi, which is the ETF. And these are all just money Legos. They're just ingredients. Put them in a pot, mix it around, see what the consumers want.
Yeah, exactly. The bottom line is this is more free markets, and that's important. Mm-hmm. The old process, we didn't mention, but we should probably add, it had to go through kind of the five commissioners in chair for approval, right? And if one of them or two of them said no, it wasn't getting through. And this is much more permissionless. David, tell me about the base token, okay? They're exploring it. Is this official? What exactly did they say?
The first thing that you should know about the base token, Ryan, is that it's early. And that they're exploring it. That's what they want you to know. But the existence of a base token was formally incepted by Jesse Pollock at Basecamp. Basecamp is like kind of this retreat for the base ecosystem happening in Detroit. So I think it was like a 3-4-5 day kind of like base festival, which I think is pretty cool. I actually appreciate the in real life manifestation of like a network in real life. So all the builders can come together and hang out. And so during a presentation, Jesse Pollock says, we are going to be exploring a network token. And he said, it's still early. They don't have any specifics to share about timing or tokenomics or governance or what the token does or anything at all, really. But they just verbally stated, confirmed, that they are beginning to explore a network token. Now, my first reaction here was, okay, Jesse, who is a executive at a Fortune 500 company that is publicly traded and very large, if you say that you are beginning to explore a network token, you have already explored a network token. Yes, your lawyers have already given you the thumbs up that you can say this. But as I listen to him more, and we'll play a clip, I kind of think that they are actually closer to being truly on the early stage. It's not just lip service. They are doing it in this way that's like, we're going to do it with the Base community. Let's go listen to this clip right now.
We're going to be exploring a network token for Base. And I will be upfront with y'all. It's early. And I'm a little nervous, like my heart's racing sitting here on stage. And as we thought about sharing this like early exploration, I got all sorts of advice. People telling me don't share it. You need to keep it close to your chest. It's too early. And I sat back in myself and our team sat back in ourselves and we said, what's the base way to do this? And the base way was we do it in the open. We don't have all the answers. We really don't. But we're going to figure it out. And we're going to figure it out together. because we think this could be a really, really powerful tool for building the global economy that all of us believe in.
All right. So there you go. I mean, Jesse gave three big like guiding commitments: maintaining deep ties to Ethereum, strict regulatory compliance, obviously, and open community collaboration. So don't really know what this looks like going forward, but I think if you're just like a base stakeholder, if you're in the base ecosystem, your voice matters, which is kind of cool. We'll see how like unconstrained Base actually is with the token and with lawyers from Coinbase, because there's going to be the big topic issue to figure out, which is how do you give the Base token away to the Base community? How do you use it as a tool to incent adoption? How do you bake in economics into that Base token based off of like the $70 million a year or whatever revenue Base makes without offending the coin equity holders, of which
I think that's partially why they're using this kind of hedging term. Like, we're exploring it. Yeah. Like, we're doing this in the open. Like, you know, we'll figure out what the good ideas are. In case it wasn't clear that they're exploring this, this is Brian Armstrong. To be clear, there are no definitive plans. We're updating our philosophy. As of now, we're exploring it. So this is even Brian Armstrong saying, like, hold on, we're just like exploring it. Okay. But there is a big question of what would the value of the Base token be? If it was put out there. And David, you mentioned some of the revenue that Base is driving right now on their token just from like running the sequencer. It's about $70 million, I believe, annualized in terms of revenue.
$75 million annualized, yeah.
Yeah, $75 million. And of all the L2 gross profit, right? You have Arbitrum, you have ZK Sync, you have all these L2s. Base is about 70% of that. Okay, yeah. And they have 4.4 billion in stablecoins. So it's pretty big. Now, if you took the comps of maybe some peers, like an L2, like an Arbitrum or an Optimism or ZK Sync, and you look at the price to sales ratios that they're trading at, you get, and you took the average of that, if you took a price to sales ratio of 900x for Base, which is around the midpoint of those three others, you get the Base token being worth between $65 billion and $70 billion, okay? Just at a similar comp to its peers, all right? Which kind of doesn't feel like it makes sense.
What's Coinbase at?
Coinbase is around $85 billion, I believe. So that's the coin stock, okay? Again, who knows if these types of comps will last, but that's what peers are trading at right now. So it is a big question as to like, how do you even parcel out? Does a Base token holder actually get some of that revenue that is generated from the L2? If it doesn't, what's the purpose of the token? And then to your point earlier, like, how does this accrue to a coin stockholder? Because Coinbase has a fiduciary duty to coin stockholders as well. I mean, there was talk that the token of Base is coin shares. You go buy it in your brokerage account. It's just coin.
Yeah.
So how do they parse this out? How do they parcel this out?
Right.
What do regulators say about this? These are all TBD questions. And I think that's probably why, David, they're exploring it in the open.
Okay. So I just got a little bit of a sticker shock when you gave me the $65 to $75 billion network token valuation. But if I go to CoinGecko, Solana is at $136 billion fully diluted. Dogecoin, which is the next blockchain below Solana, is at $43 billion. So that puts Base squarely between Dogecoin and Solana, which I think is completely reasonable.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable place
to be. It's reasonable if you comp it to other like crypto, I guess, native assets. But it doesn't seem reasonable at all when you comp it to like Coinbase shares.
To Coinbase shares.
Yeah, and when you comp it to the amount of revenue that it's generating. So what does this say? There's some sort of wild premium for being a crypto asset right now, is one interpretation.
Yeah, there always has been. The token premium is real, whether it's the layer one premium or layer two premium or whatever. How this gets divided up between the coin shares and the Base token holders, I don't know. But you would imagine as a coin holder, if something of like nearly equivalent valuation gets minted off to your left and you don't have any of it, but you had technical legal ownership over it, you'd be kind of pissed.
Sure. I mean, but they could just mint, you know, give 30% whatever to the community, I guess, via airdrop and call that, you know, marketing. And 70% maybe belongs to coin shareholders. And, you know, if that's, say, worth
$50 billion.
everyone's happy.
They should do something like that, like 10-20% to the base community, base developers, base builders, base incentives. And then like 80% is claimable on chain if you register your brokerage that you hold coin in to your basic address. It would be the biggest onboarding event of all time.
Interesting. I mean, that's probably why they're thinking about this creatively, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of growth marketing mechanisms and reward incentives to do that. That's not the only thing they announced. This is probably the biggest thing they announced at Basecamp. They also announced a Base to Solana bridge that got a lot of attention. And so this effectively allows you to port Base tokens into Solana, like natively, so they could be used in mm-hmm. Solana
and vice versa. Mainly vice versa. They kind of want the Solana tokens to go onto Base.
Yeah, so that brought the question of like, oh, is this a vampire attack? Who's vampire attacking who? Or is this just mm-hmm. like trade relations? We're opening up trade relations between the chains and kind of an interchange. Like, obviously,
I think if you build the bridge and you govern the bridge, you get to kind of have some control over the flows.
Okay.
Like, you can set directions.
If you're the one building the bridge, that probably means you also mm-hmm. want it more, doesn't it? So it seems like Base probably wants Solana's liquidity. I mean, Solana, maybe they benefit from Base's DeFi, but there's just a lot of retail, degen, liquidity going on at Solana that I think that Base is looking over and be like, oh, we could use a bridge over here. It'd be great to have some of those assets in our ecosystem.
I'll wait to see how Phantom leverages this, because they have both Base and Solana in their wallet. And I'm sure they would love to have a faster, better bridge to transfer users' assets between.
Yeah, I agree. There is also some progress with the Base app. It has a wait list of 1 million people, so that's going well. But here's actually one of the most exciting things. This wasn't at Basecamp. This was actually a Google press release that I saw. This is powering AI commerce with new agent payment protocols, AP2. AP2 is a library that Google is incorporating for AI agent payments. Anyway, buried in the press release, you could see a link to a GitHub where Google is actually implementing a Coinbase and Ethereum Foundation MetaMask standard called X402. And we've discussed this on Bankless before, but what X402 is, it's actually in the original web specification all the way back from the early 90s. It was a payment specification that really never got filled in. It was sort of a, you know, machine-to-machine type of payment standard that never got filled in. Coinbase developed the standard further, crypto enabled it. What this allows, David, is Google AI agents to actually pay each other via crypto. And you can imagine the use case here. You're in Google Gemini, maybe you query something and you hit some sort of server, but rather than scraping all the data, that server says, no, in order to get this data from me, let's say it's weather data or something, you're going to have to pay me in microtransactions. So, yeah. Google AI Gemini just says, okay, here's a few cents, pays them in stablecoins, completes that transaction, brings the data back into your Gemini chatbot. I think that's like an architecture that is going to be massive in how the way AI is going to rewrite the entire internet. These like tiny microtransactions from agents to agents, from agents to other services. And X402 is the standard that does it. And Google has adopted it, which is kind of exciting.
We were talking just before we hit record about how some websites that we like, news websites, are just totally broken when we go and log into them. We're talking like mainly Forbes was the one we were talking about, but other ones too. Even some of the crypto native ones, like, you know, Schmoindesk. when you log on to them, it's just like there are 13 ads, and then they interact with my ad blocker, so they turn into blank space. But then I'm like, where's the words?
Oh yeah.
If I just have an embedded wallet that's connected to the same protocol, I don't have to be an agent. But if the website is like, oh, in order to read this article, you need to pay me 5 cents on USDC payable on Base. And that can just happen in the background. And I can just have my wallet be like, yeah, like once every time I visit this website is allowed to take 5 cents from my wallet. Don't even give me a pop-up.
100%.
And then all of a sudden I can be presented a beautiful website designed how the designers wanted it to be designed. That would just improve internet UX so much better.
Or I don't know if you're like me, but I barely go to websites anymore. I do a lot more through the, like, chat interface, right? It's basically like I'll do a query inside of my chat, but the problem is the websites are becoming ad slums because they don't have a revenue model aside from like your eyeballs. Right. And all the eyeballs are going somewhere else. And so this gives like a new business model to creators, which is just microtransactions, which I think is incredibly important so that we don't get dead internet, basically, where it's just AI creating AI content. You actually have a mechanism for like a revenue model for creators. David, speaking of really interesting revenue models, we have an update on Hyperliquid's pick for their stablecoin. Remember the ticker we were talking about last week? Mm-hmm.
USDH.
So who won?
Native Markets, the the organization that was the favorite by the validators, have secured the USDH ticker that gives them the rights to manage and issue USDH. Native Markets beat out Paxos, Sky, Athena, Frax, all the other ones just because their proposal was accepted. So what happens next? The first Hyperliquid improvement proposal for USDH will get created and then assumingly approved. USDH will launch on Ethereum. So this will be a stablecoin that's around the Ethereum ecosystem. And it's the first natively issued Hyperliquid stablecoin with a brand new liquidity and yield source. Circle, still relevant here because they have 7% of all USD supply on Hyperliquid. They're not necessarily losers here because they have also made a deal. They are partnering with Hyperliquid to launch native USDC and their Circle Bridge all on Hyperliquid. And so native USDC will be directly issued on the Hype EVM. The CCTP V2 bridge, that's Circle's bridge, will just be deployed straight on Hyperliquid. So they will have native minting on USDC on Hyperliquid, which just gives better on-ramps off and on Hyperliquid. It's like probably one of the bigger things that plagues Hyperliquid is just like difficulty in on-ramping. And so that this will help allow Circle to maintain some of that USDC supply that they have on Hyperliquid, which is large, very large.
Worth a lot to them, right? Some numbers like worth 100 to 200 million per year at least, and one of their highest growth segments. We got more stablecoin news coming up. Mm-hmm. We've got Tether's Made in America stablecoin. We'll talk about that. Also, I want to give you some quotes from the most bullish speech we've seen from a regulator, Chair Paul Atkins. Crypto's time has come. That was the theme of the episode. And then we'll go around the world and talk about UK capital controls, Canada losing some of its bank customers, what's going on with Ghana and how they're using crypto to flee a predatory banking system, and also Nepal. There's like a internet crypto-led revolution that just happened over there. And I think it's probably one of the most important things that's not being talked about in mainstream media today. All that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including Frax. Some of the best yield in DeFi. It's a fantastic stablecoin. Like Circle, Athena, and Maker all had a baby, came together as Frax. Let's go hear from them now.
In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and roll-ups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fraxtl's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation, powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards.
When you research a new protocol, you shouldn't have to juggle 12 tabs just to get the full picture. Market data, on-chain activity, social sentiment, developer updates, they're all scattered across different platforms. Surf brings it all together. It's the first crypto AI platform that combines institution-grade research with on-chain execution in one interface. From discovery and research to action, Surf gives you a full end-to-end experience. Instead of bouncing between Dune, DeFi Llama, Twitter, and GitHub, Surf gives you the story behind the data in seconds. Whether you're evaluating a protocol, tracking positions, monitoring whale moves, or exploring the next narrative, Surf upgrades your workflow so you can spend less time piecing things together and more time making informed decisions. Check out Surf today and experience crypto AI that actually works. Sign up now and use code BANKLESS to get a 7-day free trial to Surf Pro. Click the link in the description for more information. Introducing KGen, aka Verify, the world's largest verified distribution protocol, or VDP. If you're trying to grow a real protocol or app, you need real users doing real actions. If it's not Verify, it's just noise. At the core of Verify is Poggy, KGen's identity and reputation framework. It helps you reach humans, not bots, and proves what your users actually did, so your budget goes to the right people. With Verify, you can run verified user acquisition with confidence, keeping people coming back with retention tools like loyalty rewards, quests and achievements, and even power AI training and evaluation using trusted verified user groups, ensuring your models learn from clean data. And when it's time to reward your community, there's the K-Store, a global rewards marketplace where users can redeem perks that connect directly back to your app. Put simply, when growth is built on real users, you grow faster. And that's exactly what Verify delivers. If you're building in Web3, AI, or gaming, request a demo to grow your protocol at www.kgen.io/demo. That's www.kgen.io/demo.
USAT is the ticker. It's a pretty Chad ticker. USAT, that's Tether's version of their USA stablecoin. USA with two lines in it to get the currency symbol in there. So this isn't unlike how Binance had, once upon a time, Binance and then Binance US. This is, there's Tether, and now there's Tether, you know, US, USA.
Oh, you mean it had a separate exchange basically just for US customers?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it was a separate legal entity, which is what this is as well. And so USAT has its own CEO, who is named Bo Hines, who is a previous White House crypto advisor who left recently to go do this. Yeah. So got a little bit of a revolving door. Why do we need USAT when we have USDT? Is because USDT is not Genius compliant. It's not compliant with the recent Genius Act for stablecoins. USAT is. And so it's just Tether's version of a Genius compliant stablecoin. They're keeping the existence of USDT uncompliant, so they have some of the freedoms that they want to have offshore. I think many, many, many countries prefer Tether to be very offshore.
Yeah.
And this one is going to be a competitor with like Circle and all the other onshore stablecoins.
Yeah, also something that we've mentioned before is with USDT, they can have other things in their treasury that backs USDT aside
like
from
gold
just
and Bitcoin.
Straight up treasuries, which they have. Yeah. Who would want to give that up if you're Tether?
Not them. Very pricey.
Yeah. So they're just kind of doing both. It's interesting that you mentioned the revolving door here, right? So this is Bo Hines, very like Mr. USA crypto, very plugged into the White House, of course. And then he comes to Tether to kind of run this. And you could kind of like question that, like, oh, revolving door, that's not great. At the same time, David, this is how like political systems work. And if crypto isn't doing this, then the bank lobby is. Something that has risen on the profile this week is a fight that the banks are waging in DC, their lobbyist groups, against the Genius Bill Act. So we've talked about this a little bit, which is there is the banks consider this a loophole in the Genius Bill that actually allows exchanges, other protocols to give yield from stablecoins back to the stablecoin owner. Okay. The Genius Bill tried to shore that up by preventing issuers from giving the yield back to customers. So again, with stablecoins, it's the Fed fund rate. You get the treasury rate. It's about 4% up for grabs. In your checking account, the bank takes that. The banks continue to want to take that. They don't want stablecoin yields to go to actual customers. So they're calling for a redo.
They don't want customers to have money.
Yes, they don't. They want to keep it. So they're actually going to Congress and they are really ramping up their lobbying efforts to have Congress
pass. They're asking for a do-over.
Yeah, they want a do-over.
A do-over, please.
They want an amendment to the Genius Bill that prevents any owner of a stablecoin from actually getting that yield. So it's really heating up. And I feel like it's a clash of the titans going on right now. This is, the banking lobby is super strong in DC, David. Mm-hmm. They have been forever. So almost $700 million a year, I believe, spent by the banking financial services type lobby. And then suddenly crypto, over the last 2 years, it just ramped up. It's a new kid on the block and is punched way above its weight class. Yeah. So it's the tiny crypto lobby right now that has made some incredible gains recently that is in favor, and I think the Trump administration, against the entrenched bank lobby that is still incredibly powerful. And these two forces are fighting it out right now.
I think actually this is the biggest like quest line, like issue of crypto right now. Like this is the most interesting thing, the most interesting
the fight against the banks.
The fact that the banks were out lobbied by somebody, by us, by the crypto people, I think is very notable.
Yeah.
It's also worth realizing that like, okay, the banks haven't really had any adversaries to lobby against.
Exactly.
They've been just controlling. They've had their monopoly.
They've had
the control. They own the town. There's no adversary that they have. Crypto shows up on the scene and all of a sudden they do have a huge adversary, and we have been chewing glass for 4 years. And so, yeah, we punch above our weight class, but because it was a matter of survival and the incumbent bank lobbies, like
They got caught flat-footed.
I don't even know if they're good at this. And so, yeah, they have the size, they have the money, they can brute force this. But I mean, crypto, we're modern, we're young, we're hungry, we have upside here. And I think, we punch above our weight class because of all of these things that we have.
Well, we're also on the right side of the population. I mean, what American citizen, when you're like, hey, the banks are taking 4% of your money and crypto actually wants to give you that 4%, whose side are you on? Who's going to be on Team Bank? Like crypto in this case, crypto in this case is on the side of the people, which is a big deal.
Right.
But David, I think these types of crypto versus the banks types of like fights are just heating up, and they're going to go international. They're going to go into the central banks. I caught this tweet from Brian Armstrong. He said this. This was on September 16th. Speaking to Canadians. So this is Canadians, Coinbase, Canada users. He said the interest rate for most checking accounts is 0% in Canada. That makes zero sense. So from today, all Canadians can earn 4.1% uncapped rewards on USDC on Coinbase and up to 4.5% with Coinbase One. Okay. Here is a outside of Canada company CEO saying, hey, you can convert your Canadian dollars into US dollars, which many would say is an advantage in and of itself. It's a better currency, outperforms at times Canadian dollars, and we'll give you 4.1% on top of that. David, I think if he is successful in this, and there's no reason why he wouldn't be, that is going to drain the checking accounts of Canadian banks. Essentially, retail is going to flock to this service. I certainly would if I lived in Canada. And so what do you think the reaction is going to be from the Canadian banks, from the Central Bank of Canada?
Something like a frantic grasping for straws to retain power and money. Something like that.
I think it's probably going to come in the form of capital controls. There's actually another story from the UK. So moved to Canada to the UK. So the Bank of England already has a plan for this. So the Bank of England plans to put a cap on individual stablecoin holdings. So you can only have 10,000 to 20,000 pounds per person. Okay. And this isn't even the threat of a foreign currency like USDC. They're just talking about pound stablecoins. Like hypothetically, I'm not sure how many pound stablecoins exist, but individual citizens couldn't own more than 10 to 20K in pounds per person, because basically they think that their banks are under threat if individuals hold more than this. Okay. This is a form of light stablecoin capital controls, isn't it? And then there's the greater question of, well, how do you surveil that? Okay, like, how do you know how much I own? Oh, okay, so you're doing surveillance in the entire blockchain. Mm-hmm. And what am I not entitled to?
Surveillance and capital controls go hand in hand.
Okay, so that's the UK. We talked about Canada. Let's go to Ghana, so West Africa. This is Kofi. He's, I believe, a senior data nerd at Base. So he works at Base. He's plugged into crypto. He said, stablecoins are better than banks in West Africa. Last week, the Bank of Ghana announced a 5% fee on dollar cash withdrawals from dollar bank accounts. Okay. So if you have a bank account in Ghana denominated in dollars, you try to withdraw those funds, 5% fee, 5% wealth tax, right? He said some banks have even stopped allowing dollar cash withdrawals altogether. This is a massive blow for both businesses and regular people. He said the Ghana, CDI, I believe, trades like a shitcoin. That's Ghana's local currency. Over the past 2 years, it's swung from 11 to the dollar, up to 16, back to 10. Now it's sitting at 12. So there's a fee for cash withdrawals. The local currency in Ghana trades like a shitcoin. So stable coins are way better. I keep USDC in my self-custody wallet, he says. When I need to spend, I swap stables for CDI straight into my mobile money account at the real street rate, which is far better than what the banks give. Okay. This probably hasn't saturated enough in West Africa, in Ghana, for authorities to really take notice, or maybe they're starting to. Don't you think there's going to be some capital controls put on stablecoins and crypto in West Ghana as well as a reaction to this?
Oh, I think it's going to happen across the global south, and then it's just going to like move up the market cap of fiat currencies. Do you remember when we did our dollar milkshake episode with Brent Johnson?
Yeah, that's right. That's
his,
right.
His general thesis is the first, there is going to be a sucking of liquidity to the dollar and then eventually into Bitcoin as fiats collapse. And the existence of stablecoins give fiat currencies and holders of fiat currencies, savers of fiat currencies, an alternative. And so why would they hold the Ghanaian CEDI, CD? And so why would they do that when they can just hold dollars? And so they're going to use stablecoins as the cleanest exit ramp to hold dollars. And this is what we are seeing. This is like the early stages of the dominoes of low quality fiat currencies. And they're all going to go on chain onto dollars and get savings accounts on Ethereum.
And when they do, nation state banks are going to crack down, create tighter, mm-hmm. more strict capital yep. controls. And that's going to push mm-hmm. more citizens, global citizens, into crypto assets. Particularly yeah. as decentralized as they need to be.
Constrict and they're going to control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it will also incent people to get out at the same time.
Exactly. And I think we saw an example even last week of this going to the far extreme. Have you seen what's going on in Nepal?
I know that they did a governance vote in Discord.
Okay, yeah. So, okay, there was a revolution in Nepal. I haven't looked at all of the details here, but it's basically a youth movement where the Nepalese government has been authoritarian, very unpopular, and they literally forced the prime minister of Nepal to resign. And they held a Discord vote, by the way. This is kind of like young internet native citizens of
Solana
Nepal.
Solana was ahead of his time.
Yeah, they voted for the prime minister. But what they were doing while this crackdown, the government against some of the revolutionaries was happening is revolutionaries, the only sort of like money that they could actually use was crypto. This is a quote from one of them. "We can't rely on banks. They serve politicians, not the people," said a 25-year-old protester in Nepal speaking under a pseudonym for fear of arrest. "USDT is the only money that moves when everything else is blocked." So they were using mm-hmm. VPNs, decentralized wallets, peer-to-peer apps, stablecoins, cryptocurrencies. That's the way they actually had to move capital during these protests. And it led to an entire revolution, which is mm-hmm. wild. Like, this is the stuff that's going on outside of the US, you know, on crypto rails.
Every time I hear stories like this, I just get reminded about how incredibly prescient the book Sovereign Individual was. All of this was predicted in 1998, whenever that book was written.
Yeah, I guess it's just getting to the point. I mean, I think stablecoins are really shaking things up, right? Because, it's just exporting the dollar worldwide, and that's going to shake up the banking system.
Yeah. It's like we used the word destabilizing at the beginning of this episode, and like to some degree it is, as in it like it's disruptive towards the governments, but also during a revolution, people, individuals still have access to money. And so while it's destabilizing, it's also like still giving some notion of stability because everyone still has their money. And so it's creating change. It's creating change at the top, but everyone has this foundation of like, well, the finance system still works.
Yeah. Well, it's a freedom technology, right? Individuals can marshal this. And it almost reminds me of like, remember 2011, Arab Spring, and some of the revolutions that happened by route of like Twitter? People had access mm-hmm. to it. Almost reminds me a little bit of like what's happening there. Let's mm-hmm. go back to the US though and talk about this speech that Paul Atkins, the SEC chair, the anti-Gensler, gave in Paris this week. So he was speaking to an OECD roundtable. So this is kind of an economics roundtable. David, I pulled out some quotes from this speech. Okay, here's a few. Number one, he said, crypto's time has come. He said, it is a new day at the SEC. He said, our policy will no longer be set by ad hoc enforcement actions. We will provide clear, predictable rules of the road so that innovators can thrive in the U.S. He said, President Trump has tasked me with making America the crypto capital of the world. He said, using Project Crypto, we're going to enable our markets to move on chain. We're going to allow entrepreneurs to raise capital on chain without endless legal uncertainty. He said, we're going to provide the minimum effective dose of regulation and not overburden entrepreneurs with additional rules. He said, public blockchains, which are inherently global, offer a chance to modernize the foundations of payments and capital markets.
And we have 3 more years of him. No,
yes.
Wait, no, we have 5 more years of him because he lasts for six years, right?
I think so, unless something happens.
To 5 more years, Ryan. Cheers.
This is in Paris to an international community, right? U.S. equities markets are like 60 to 70% of global equities. Okay. Like the SEC is the juggernaut when it comes to equities tokenization. So what the U.S. does and what the SEC says will propagate to the rest of the world. And this is the SEC chair saying we're going to tokenize all of our securities. That's so wild.
Sick.
That's
awesome.
I just can't believe we've come this far.
Yeah. It was a big, it's a whiplash, honestly. It makes it kind of hard to believe like how bad it was just like 18 months ago.
And then how good it's gotten right now. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, knock on wood, but still 5 more years. All right, we're going to burn through the rest of the news this week. Polymarket has launched the trading of earnings. And so you can trade different companies' earnings reports, whether you think they're going to beat or miss on earnings, which is notable because when you own a company and they beat earnings, sometimes the price goes down, which is frustrating. But if you want the price to go up, you can trade earnings on Polymarket if you think companies are going to beat or miss earnings. So that's pretty cool. That's worth noting. There's this thing happening in the Aerodrome universe this week, Ryan. There was a new mechanism for issuing and distributing a token. So there's one organization called Syndicate. They made the DGEN chain, if you remember, Ryan. They have launched the SYND token. Don't know what it does. It's not the story. The story is that they seeded the Aerodrome liquidity pool. So Aerodrome is a next generation AMM.
Right.
They seeded some supply of the SYND token, SYND, into Aerodrome.
Okay.
And they allowed VE Aero token holders, which is kind of the same thing as like the Curve Wars, same tokenomics as the Curve system. And so if you wanted to own some of this token, you as a VE Aero token holder would, using your governance rights, point incentives towards the SYND token, which would give the SYND token its initial liquidity and therefore its initial market price. And then as a result of doing that, as a VE Aero holder, you got some of the SYND token as reward. So if you wanted the SYND token, you would use your governance powers to point stables, point liquidity towards the SYND token, and then you would get SYND incentives as a result. So this happened like 2 days ago, 3 days ago. SYND is trading at a $1.5 billion valuation with a $700 million market cap, so a 50% float. The thing, Ryan, floated at $1.5 billion. You know all the IPOs that we're about to talk about in a second and all the crypto IPOs that have happened over the last 2 months or so?
Yeah.
And like Circle floats at $20 billion and then 3 days later, it's like at a 6X because it was mispriced. This thing just launched smoothly with no snipers, no sniping bots, no like gas wars, just smoothly launched at $1.5 billion. I need to know a little bit more about the mechanics here and how this all works. I'm going to talk to the Syndicate guys about what happened on a premium feed podcast episode. So congrats to premium subscribers for getting all that alpha. I think it's a pretty cool mechanism. I'm excited to learn more. But the idea of smoothly launching in an orderly and an efficient way a $1.5 billion token is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's also Aerodrome is on Base, right? So this is available inside of Coinbase retail.
The token's available
on
Coinbase already.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not Coinbase, the centralized exchange, but inside of the Base app, which is just, I guess, one and the same thing, isn't it?
No, it is available on the centralized exchange.
It's both.
It is not listed There's not an order book on the centralized exchange, but the centralized exchange, you can buy it as a Coinbase retail customer.
And then when you're buying it, though, behind the scenes, you're buying it from Aerodrome, right? You're
correct.
Buying it from the
yes.
liquidity pool.
Correct. Yes.
It's DeFi and CeFi. Yes. It's all mixed together, right? It's DeFi mullet. Love it.
Somebody made this DeFi mullet term forever ago. Wow, they were really smart.
Really quick, Gemini was listed on the NASDAQ this week. So, of course, this is a U.S. exchange. Did pretty well, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, this is the Winklevi. Yeah, it pumped. Gemini prices shares at $28. The IPO was oversubscribed by 20x. The first day had a 32% jump. So, the market likes crypto stocks, that's for sure. Also, speaking of that, there was Trump. Trump's family's American Bitcoin just went public on the NASDAQ this week as well. So, there's Eric Trump on the NASDAQ. He's cheering for their launch. This was like a Bitcoin mining company, Bitcoin treasury mm-hmm. company, yep. like all combined about yeah. 7 billion market cap. And 20% of this is owned by the Trump brothers. So
how do you feel about the president's son ringing the bell for his newly launched company on the NASDAQ? How do you feel about that?
I think the Trumps have fantastic deal flow right now. Let me just say that. I will say not everyone liked it, right? This is Virginia Cantor. She's with the Democracy Defenders Action Group, said I think probably the obvious. There's no question there's a conflict of interest here. Trump could appoint regulators overseeing crypto and potentially disadvantage other crypto businesses that don't align with his interests. So he could do all
Which,
sorts of things.
Which, to be clear, is bullish for this company.
It's bullish for this company. I'm not
it's
sure that corruption is like bullish for crypto or bullish for America, David. And speaking of which, we end with this. Have you seen the Trump statue? Have you seen this, David?
Oh my God. We used
this
to make
real.
So
this
much better
AI.
Statues 500 years ago.
All right. So this is a Trump statue. This is Trump.
This is a terrible statue.
This is Trump in gold holding a ginormous Bitcoin facing the Capitol building. So this is right in D.C. This is a 12-foot golden statue. It was unveiled on September 17th, 2025. I looked into this. I was like, is this no way this is government funded? Like, no way this is government funded.
No.
It's not government funded. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
So,
thank you.
So this Jesus was a private group of anonymous crypto investors. So there you go. With a DGTGST project. It's a pump.fund meme coin. And they did this to get attention on their project. So that's what's going on.
This is the future. This is what the future looks like.
There's no official commentary from Trump about it. Although, I mean, you know, maybe if he sees it, he might appreciate
it. A Trump
this.
Statue in gold looking like not bad. Looking, yeah. I'm not going to say good, but like I'm sure he's plenty fine with it.
How bad do you think crypto is going to get wrecked when Democrats and Trump adversaries
gain political power? It depends on which Democrat.
Power.
Yeah. It's a much Democrat.
I guess we'll see.
But potentially high.
Bankless Nation, got to end with this. Of course, none of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. It's the frontier. Not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.